good morning, brothers and sisters. It's a joy to be here, and I am grateful to your standing committee for asking me to come and be here for the next year and then some, while this diocese looks for the next diocesan bishop. It's a great privilege to be among you, and I'm thankful to your rector and all the people of this congregation for your hospitality. Well, who counts as family for you? Some among us might ask, who's your homie? It's been a question for our ancestors forever, and there are hints about how the answers changed among our primate cousins, most of whom only recognized their own small band or troop as family. Part of the human evolutionary journey, and certainly part of our spiritual journey, has been the increased ability to value our more distant relatives. Religion has been both a boon and a bane when it comes to deciding who's in and who's out. That very word religion means to tie together or to bind together, but what's bound varies enormously. Our ancestors in the faith set out a clear summary about what binds us to God and each other when they said, love God with all you've got and love your neighbor as yourself. The Torah makes it specific with 613 separate rules. Those specifics, like the kosher laws and resting on the Sabbath, set clear boundaries around the group who keep them. But at the same time, the Hebrew part of the Bible is abundantly clear that strangers and travelers, the poor, widows and orphans, and people who don't have any close family are supposed to be treated with particular kindness and abundant generosity. The boundaries are far broader than Uncle John and Tia Maria. Most of what we've heard this morning, and I apologize for the loud mistake, I caused it. We heard the alternate reading this morning instead of what was printed. But most of those readings, all of them, confront the question about who's part of the family. You know the story about Joseph being sold into slavery by his half-brothers because they think he's too proud of his beautiful coat. But after years in which he rose to be Pharaoh's chief operating officer, his brothers have come looking for help in a time of famine. Joseph claims the family that tried to do away with him. And he tells those brothers to go home and bring all their families and everybody they count as family to the table in Egypt. And he will feed them for as long as necessary. And everybody dissolves in tears. Tears of repentance, tears of forgiveness, tears of gratitude, and tears at recovering the one who had been dead and lost. Paul wrestles with the same question in the midst of a family split over who Jesus is and was. He says God has not rejected the people who were called out of Egypt and brought to a promised land. No, God never rejects anyone God calls. And Paul goes even further. He says that God's mercy isn't just the response to sin and error, but that the fact that we're all mired in error is God's way of bringing us that kind of abundant and overflowing mercy. Doesn't mean it's an invitation to wanton disobedience or crazy decision making, but it's a reassurance that those everlasting arms are always open wide to receive us and welcome us home. And who's welcome at home but family? Robert Frost famously said that home is the place where, when you go there, They have to take you in. Jesus is at least as radical. Any religiously observant man in his day knew that he shouldn't talk to a Canaanite woman. And the boundary was even higher for a teacher or a rabbi. This foreign woman who supposedly practices a different religion, yet knows who the Son of David is, confronts Jesus and asks him to heal her daughter. He ignores her, but she keeps pleading. And the disciples get annoyed and tell him to give her the brush off. His answer may sound to us like a nasty and rude retort, but in that context, he's simply saying that his mission is to his own Jewish people, his family. He's supposed to be feeding the children of Israel, not the wild dogs who don't know anything about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The woman has a better comeback. Well, even the dogs get the scraps under the table. She's claiming membership in the household of God, the creator of all who live on this planet. And Jesus basically says, "Wow, you get it, and you got me." His definition of God's family just got expanded. All of us live with the challenge of who is worth our notice, our love, our caring. It's an ongoing struggle to expand our hearts as we walk the way of Jesus. And it's often the rejected one or the outsider who creates the opportunity. Joseph with his brothers, his murderous brothers, the Jew and the emerging Christians, the Canaanite woman who wants crumbs for her daughter. People who insist that black lives matter. When I was here several years ago, the members of Diocesan Convention were sent home with paper lunch sacks. Each one had a bottle of water, some snacks, a prayer card, and a folder that told about where you could find social services in the area. We were invited to offer a bag of blessing to people asking for help on highway medians, or begging on the street, or camped out in the city park. It may not exactly be taking somebody home for dinner, but offering a blessing bag requires acknowledging another human being, seeing a person in need, and it just might break our heart open enough to claim a brother or sister in the family of God. We're wrestling with the same reality on the national and the global stage. Charlottesville is an icon of the sibling rivalry in Joseph's family. Me first. No me. I'm more important than you are. The gospel insists that there is enough for all. Enough respect. Enough of God's love. Enough space. Indeed, enough opportunity if we can let go of our urge to hoard. It's interesting to note that most of our primate relatives don't hoard food. They live in gardens where the food may be seasonal and where the individuals may fight over what they find there, but at least in their family bands, all the monkeys get fed. What gets in our way is fear. Fear that we won't have enough, or that somebody else is going to take what we have, whether it's food or water or the land and what it offers us. Wars get fought over those kinds of resources. But the more difficult fears, some of which do lead to wars, are about respect and dignity and position. Equal position, and who our parents loved the most. Those are just as necessary resources to dignified human life. And the hoarding impulse is what causes sibling rivalries and fear of strangers and all the isms that set up one group as more important than another. Those needs can only be answered in relationships that tell us that we're loved and valued for who we are and not for what we accomplish. Other primates compete for position too, but they also do things like grooming each other as a way of soothing ruffled feelings. Human beings communicate love and dignity and respect with our nonverbals too, but also through words and conscious acts of generous love. It takes more than instinctive responses to get past the fears. We have to use our brains and our hearts. And that's what our spiritual heritage is all about, using all the gifts we've been given to make more abundant life for everyone. Learning how to quiet the fears, recognizing that the Creator of all that is has made more than enough for all of us, and that love and respect and dignity are not finite commodities that we have to compete for. Getting past the fear takes practice, which is at least one of the reasons why we call it practicing our faith. When we're confronted with a threat, our instincts tell us to defend ourselves, even violently. Yet with practice, our hearts and our brains can learn more loving ways. Paul even claims that struggle is God's way to bring us mercy. True mercy looks like the interfaith shelter, your December AIDS service, your Samaritan tree. It's not unlike reaching out to others in Escondido in this conversation about the library, being neighbors to everyone. It's about feeding the hungry and comforting the wounded. It's a loving response when somebody frightens you. How about greeting the grumpy neighbor with a smile? We have one at the diocesan office. Or blessing the driver who cuts you off in traffic with all your fingers. We're all family. Fearless love acts like Joseph reconciling with his murderous brothers. It looks like that Canaanite woman demanding that Jesus heal her daughter. Who is hard for you to include in your family? That's an invitation to practice and to put your fearless love to work.